League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Precision Cookie and more than 500 whiskeys to choose from. Plus, a great place to host your party and the best mini barrel-aged old-fashioned for stocking stuffers, too. Making plans for New Year's Eve? You're invited to their 2023 countdown party with a very special three-course menu. Federal American Grill is in Katy, Shepherd, Hedwig Village, and the Woodlands. Make reservations today at thefederalgrill.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, brought to you by Zada Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston. Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the killer bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Blankers and I just made a five-year bet. I think it's great for our relationship, for our friendship. It's now documented in our Google Docs. I think we missed the boat on the stakes, though. I feel like if you're making a five-year bet, it's got to be more significant than a lunch date.
No, I would be more significant if I was more adamant that it was like someone that I personally talked to instead of someone relaying information to me to where then maybe it would be better stakes. It's fine that I'm not going to shy away from it enough to that, and we know each other well enough that's fine. Well, we can make that kind of bet. I'm not going to like go for like this massive dinner at a steak place.
Man, I would have
unless
liked
it
that.
Was because Lamont just, been willing Lamont to do just that. Tweeted that what Bob McNair supposedly made it in his will or something that the team can never be sold. I'd never heard that.
I don't know how to do that. Although the Killer Bees can draft up your wills at a significant cost.
Yep. I will say, just in general, I assume NFL teams won't be sold because they're like they print money.
Right, exactly.
But
that's where I'm at.
That being said, the only time that you ever see sports teams get sold are when like whoever purchased them dies.
I was going to say the Bolins in Denver. That was one where you thought was never going to leave the family,
the
and
only
once Pat Bolin died,
seen.
Then the siblings started to squabble, and the next thing you know, the team's up for sale. And they all want to cash in because not all of them had the passion for the Broncos that certain members of the family
How often do you guys think an NFL team sells? Like once a decade? Is that even?
Oh, it's more than that.
Is it?
I believe it's more than that. Think about all the old school Blue Bloods with the Rooneys,
the Broncos,
and
just
the
sold.
Fords,
yeah, but I mean,
and the McCaskies.
I don't think you can look at old like the old school though, like because the NFL being a cash cow,
it's
like
been
it's always been a cash cow
since Kraft bought the Patriots.
Right. That's I think you're proving Brendan's point.
No,
though.
Brandon said once a decade,
but you're saying it's more.
I think it's longer than 10 years.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's talking about each individual franchise. I think he means of the 32 NFL teams,
how often is one sold?
Yeah.
I mean, you remember that what's-his-name had to sell in Carolina?
Yeah, Dave Tepper bought it.
Yeah, Tepper bought
former
it from him
ESPN
because the guy got exposed for...
Usually that's what it requires to sell. Like, yeah. Daniel Snyder might end up selling. Why? Because he's in trouble. Like,
what about Jacksonville and Shad Khan bought?
I have the years that every current team was acquired.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often, especially now, because it's like you're making so much money.
You're printing money.
Yeah.
It looks like before, you had one in 2012, one in 2011, one in 2004. Actually, you had a lot in 2010.
So it has, I mean, the Broncos.
11, but, 12, but, 14,
but
18.
The reasons matter. So if it's like, if it's just the family wants to sell, it's one thing.
Yeah.
If it's because of the owner doing
scandal.
Some.
There were six teams sold in the 2010s.
So that negates your theory.
That's fine. It was speculation.
But before that, I would bet it was quite a long time for a majority, if not all.
There are a few sprinkled in through the 2000s, a few in the 90s. I mean, like you pointed out, there are probably 10 that have been owned since like at least the 70s.
We should start a GoFundMe to buy an NFL team.
Yeah.
Maybe from Cal.
Yeah.
Maybe from Cal. Killer Bees.
Alex Rodriguez and Kevin Durant and all these guys that have these and grandiose plans.
You know Barkley. You know connections. I think you can organize all of this.
I'll get Barkley, McHale, and whoever else I know that used to play, and we're still not going to come
And then
close.
We'll be 0.5%
of
the way
we're not
there.
Even going to come close when you see what these teams are going for.
And then I'll be the GM and I'll hire Josh McCown. The Rockets, they play tonight against arch rival San Antonio. I'm a little concerned with how much winning the Rockets are doing, by the way. But anyways, I had this thought a little bit earlier today. We'll was taking the oldest Branham son to school and was thinking about this. Could the Rockets be forced into a Monte Ellis, Steph Curry situation? If you don't remember this, I don't really blame you a whole lot, but very early in Golden State, before their dynasty, before their run of championships, they had a very young, formidable, fun backcourt that I even think went to the playoffs with Monte Ellis and Steph Curry. And at the time, you really didn't know which one was the better player. A lot of people were Team Monte. A lot of people were Team Steph. And, you know, didn't...
And Steph wasn't even close to what he was now.
No, I mean, he was a good shooter at the time, but he wasn't
injury
Steph Curry.
Prone. Yeah, he had a lot of issues with his ankle and his foot, and that it ended up why he went to Under Armour and all the things with creating his own shoe, because the Nike shoe he was wearing, they thought was directly responsible for his injuries, but he was also frail. He was very skinny.
Yep.
And there was a lot of work to be done to develop the Steph Curry we know now.
And then what did Golden State do? They traded Monte Ellis. And a lot of people were surprised by
that. Up in arms.
Why are you trading Monte? We have a young, up-and-coming team that's going to take us places. A lot of people like Monte more than Steph at the time, because Steph wasn't Steph quite yet. But the reason that Golden State did that was because they saw the vision. They saw Steph Curry becoming what Steph Curry became, and they didn't think that that was going to happen with Monte Ellis, because Monte Ellis was a lead guard. He was the alpha. He was somebody that needed the ball in his hands at all times, and it kind of was restricting the growth of Steph Curry. Are we in a situation now with the Houston Rockets where we could be looking at the early stages of that with Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green? Because if you look at Jalen Green, Jalen Green's the better player. Jalen Green was the number two pick of the NFL draft, the NBA draft. Jalen Green is supposed to be the best player on this team, the alpha, the dude that you go to. And a lot of times we see Kevin Porter Jr. late in games where he's like, no, I'm that guy. I'm the lead guard. I understand that this contract, you can get out of it year by year by year, but a pretty significant contract to Kevin Porter Jr., good enough for him to sign. I think the Rockets could be looking at some point, not today, but maybe in the offseason, maybe next year, where they're going to be forced into a Monte Ellis, Steph Curry situation.
I mean, it's possible. I think it's almost humorous to me that the conversation is starting and being pointed at as KPJ being that second star player. When you've got Şengün, when you've got Jabari Smith, who again was a top three pick, and you basically had a non-important second-round pick that really probably would never even is never going to come into play, sent to Cleveland to get this guy that you find out can play, but also has a major ton of baggage off the floor and continues to deal with that. So when you look at it, my thing is, it's kind of like wrapping up all the conversations we just had with the Texans as well. At a certain point, you have to realize when you have to start focusing on taking that next step, developing into winners. When you are ready to do that, that might be a conversation you have to have, not because he's your second best player, but because he might be deterring your best player more than anything else, or your best players. Because even if he's in the top four, if he is holding back, whether it be shots or the overall growth and development of a Jalen Green first and foremost, but even a Jabari Smith or the looks that get inside to Şengün, then he is more of a detriment than he is an advantage in the long haul for a team that is trying to grow and develop with this stable of young talent. And when you look at him play over and over again, one, he's not a point guard. We both agree on that. Two, a lot of times it is an internal egomaniac struggle between the guys on the floor as to who's getting theirs. Eric Gordon leads that charge as well as a veteran. But of the young guys, you can see when Jalen Green shoots two times in a row, KPG's like, nope, I got to shoot this time down. Then Jabari gets mad and says, nope, then I got to get the next shot. And the offense struggles mightily. So, again, when we talk about even from a general manager standpoint, the general manager's got to find a coach that can delineate through all of that and say, this is our best chance to win. These are our best players. These are our best plays. This is what we need to do. I don't think they have anything right there. I think it's dysfunctional, with the exception of a really talented young roster. So unlike the Texans, you could look at the roster and say, there's a lot of teams that would kill to have those guys to choose from and develop.
Yeah, see, like, whenever we've had the Kevin Porter Jr. conversation in the past, because, look, I think Kevin Porter Jr. is a good basketball player.
I agree with that.
I think in the right role, right situation, Kevin Porter Jr. it could really excel. And, look, he's not playing bad right now. I'm not trying to suggest that Kevin Porter Jr. is playing poorly or a problem, anything like that. But you just mentioned a couple of the other names, too. Like, you look at this roster, who are the guys that are your best offensive players? Jalen Green, I think, is 1A, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Şengün. There's a lot of times when Shingun's cooking and you play through Şengün, and Şengün's a really good passer, too.
Oh, he's a great passer, yeah.
He's not, like, whenever he's playing well, he's also getting other guys involved with his style of play and how he can be an offensive
weapon. Maybe more
weapon.
So than the other three.
Green, Kevin Porter Jr., and
Jalen Smith. I mean, Jabari Smith.
See, I would even say that Jabari has more offensive upside than Kevin Porter Jr.
I agree.
So you currently have three players on this team that have more upside than Kevin Porter Jr., and if you want to fast forward a few months as well, you're going to more than likely get a draft pick that's going to also have more upside than Kevin Porter Jr. Hopefully it's a top two pick. Rockets need to stop winning. So you're looking at least three, maybe four players by this time next year that are better offensive weapons, better offensive potential than Kevin Porter Jr. And Kevin Porter Jr. doesn't think that way. Kevin Porter Jr. wouldn't tell you that he's the fourth best offensive player. He'd probably tell you he's the best.
Kevin Porter Jr., once he signed that contract, I can tell you, got an extra dose of confidence that this is partly his team.
Look, and I don't even necessarily blame him. Like, I don't think this is a Kevin Porter Jr., he's too cocky, too arrogant, has too much of an ego conversation. Just like I didn't think Monte Ellis was that same dude. Like, this isn't anti-Kevin Porter Jr. conversation. This is being realistic with who the Rockets are, the personnel that they have on their team, and who they should be playing through.
And who they're going to become.
And who they're going to become is part of the equation in that for sure, absolutely.
Because they knew Monte Ellis was probably at a ceiling of what he was going to become.
Yep.
Whereas they didn't know how far they could develop Steph Curry, but they knew what they saw was good enough to
exactly.
say he's got a bigger upside.
But I'll go a step further, too, is that they viewed Monte Ellis as kind of putting a restrictor and a governor on Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. Steph Curry could not become the player he was going to become because Monte Ellis dominated the ball.
It's just
he
like
the usage.
I was going to say, from shots to touches to plays called for them, there's no doubt about it. Yes. You're absolutely correct.
And I see the Rockets, like I could see the future like with this team and going down that path. Where Kevin Porter Jr. is not a problem. He's not like a Malkin. I'm not saying any of that. I think he's a good player, right situation, right role. But because of his style of play, where he's putting a governor on Jalen Green's potential and development, he's putting a governor on Jabari Smith's development and his potential. He's putting a governor on Alpi Shingun's development and potential, and maybe the draft pick that you also have coming up. I think that the Rockets, maybe in a year or so, are going to be in the same situation Golden State's at, where they're looking at Kevin Porter Jr., restricting their true stars, and will be forced to have to move on.
Well, and you know what, Jeremy? Here's the other thing. As I mentioned it's twofold in terms of how you can possibly get out of this kind of bad spin cycle you're in right now. And that is, I think they need better coaching. We talked about it with the Texans as it relates to position by position. They need better coaching on both sides of the ball. But you know what they truly need? They truly need a point guard that will listen to whatever coaching they're getting to understand, hey, I know you want to ISO on the wing, Jalen. I know, Jabari, you want the ball on the other wing. I know, KPJ, you want to go and create in the lane. I've been instructed that I am distributing the basketball. We are running this play. We are going down, and I'm going to make sure whoever's open, whoever, you know, as we run get the ball over half court, is going to get it in a position to try and score. Because part of the battle is getting the ball out of their hands before it gets into the front court. When it gets into the front court, if you have a true point guard that wants to distribute first, all these guys are happier, and more guys are getting everything that they need. And I think that starts with, if you don't win the lottery and you don't get the VW, you don't get Victor Wembanyama, but you get Scoot, the real Scoot, Scoot Henderson, I believe.
They better stop winning.
You get Scoot that's a point guard that understands how to play that way, and Scoot's only primary responsibility is get those three dudes and Shengun the ball where they can score, you're a better basketball player.
Yeah, I like Wembanyama more, but I would be very happy with Scoot. I like Scoot a lot.
I think Scoot's a great fit for this team.
Give me a top two pick, but the Rockets need to stop winning. 8437, Kevin Porter Jr. He told me to stop saying Kevin Porter Jr. He said the segment feels like, how many times can Branham say Kevin Porter Jr. in one segment? Kevin Porter Jr.
How many people know they call him Scoot?
I think quite a bit. I think if you pay attention to the Rockets, you know that.
Well, then I didn't know.
So not many. 713-780-ESPN. The demise of the Astros front office has been greatly exaggerated. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Kevin Porter.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. The demise of the Astros front office has been greatly exaggerated. Here's Buster Olney when he joined us yesterday. Great get by Brendan. Really worked hard for that one.
He works hard every day, sir.
When he's here, yeah, he does. Buster Olney, when he joined the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, that Jim Crane getting rid of Click was kind of awkward.
It wouldn't surprise me. The guy that
that's not Buster Olney. That's Mike Florio.
That is Mike Florio.
Brendan.
After all the praise we just threw your way.
My goodness. We praised him for how hard he works and how great of a get Buster Olney is, and he plays somebody else's get.
B-Mac wouldn't do that.
No way.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No way. All right, here was Buster Olney yesterday when he joined the Killer Bees.
And it was not a surprise.
Sounds like Olney to me.
Stuff in the middle of 2021 that the Crane wasn't happy. And they were already, among ownership circles, people speculating, you know what, at some point David Stearns is going to wind up back with the Astros. And that still wouldn't surprise me. It makes sense for him to go back to Houston. You know, someone who Crane knows well. And here's the other part, too. I'd say this, you know, because he's gotten a lot of criticism. Jim Crane has about the choice. I think that his understanding of baseball goes beyond a lot of other owners. You know, I've heard stories about, yeah, he gets involved, but I also think he has a good feel for players. He's a good feel for clubhouses, and he does listen to people who he finds to be credible, and among those was Dusty Baker.
Yeah, like Astro great Reggie Jackson, too, by the way, which Reggie Jackson was on the last Yankee team that won a clean championship, by the way. Anyways, Buster Olney talked about how, a little surprising that Click was fired, although he had been hearing it. Crane mentions he knows baseball, or Olney mentioned that Crane knows baseball more than most owners. Crane also, I was reading Jerome Solomon's piece. He had a phone interview with Jim Crane a couple of days ago. You can listen to Jerome on the weekends on our station with Holly and Rachel as well. He comes on. He does. I heard him after the World Series. I know that for a fact. Anyways, they talked about Crane, and Crane told Solomon, he's like, look, I know the game pretty well. So Crane has, like, belief in his baseball prowess, which to some people is worrisome. To other people, it's not. I think that his baseball prowess can lead to him hiring a good
general
manager.
I think he's a savvy businessman. He knows what he knows more than most, but he also knows who to trust and talk to that knows more than him.
Look, so I think
that's big, though, in terms of, like, Buster talked about it during the interview. He knows who to bring into his tight circle.
That's where I'm at. Like, I trust Jim Crane's going to hire a sabermetric general manager to balance out all thoughts. I believe in that. A lot of people don't have that belief. I do. There was some anonymous comments and quotes on The Athletic today from the winter meetings. Most of this was about, like, Judge and, you know, how his home run record, his seventh place home run championship, just tainted now because of these Goldilocks balls, which I've said Goldilocks balls way too much in the last 24 hours. But some of these anonymous quotes coming from The Athletic talking about the Astros, there was two that were totally different. One of them said about the Astros, can I say cluster F word. This is The Athletic. So, yes, right. They are a cluster F word. It's probably who's the dude we get all the time? Keith Law. Keith Law probably gave this quote. But they're too talented for Jim Crane to mess up, and they will be for a while. So you even have a dude talking about the Astros front office being an absolute cluster, but he says that the Astros are too talented that Jim Crane's going to mess it up. Another anonymous quote, which is kind of a different tenor, Houston does not run their team with emotion. Their ownership group runs it like a business, and when I say business, I mean a cutthroat business. They feel like they can interchange people into their system and win. Quite frankly, I'm not sure that anything has shown that they can't. So you have, like, these people around baseball that either hate the Astros for what they're doing but still respect how good that they are, or you have people like this that are willing to admit that, this is a cutthroat organization, Jim Crane's cutthroat, but he does it in a way where they're going to have organizational success almost year in, year out.
I think that's the main thing that you take away, especially as a fan, but even as anybody that's looking at how the business is run. He runs all of his businesses this way, which any smart owner does, to get the most return on everything that they do, to make the most money they possibly can and get the best results. And in this case, that means winning. And the fact is that he loves to be able to crap on all these people that like to frown on them because of 17. He loves to crap on them because he's not all the owners that look at him with a side eye because, you know, the Yankees and the Cubs and the Dodgers and the Red Sox and all these big money teams are ticked off that they're not doing what the Astros are doing, but they're spending more money and they've done it forever and a day. And he wants to be a team that builds a legacy that says we weren't one of those teams and we were better than those teams with the run that we went on and the results that we got. I'm not willing to say that I'm worried or critical of anything that Crane has done to this point because that's his focus and that's exactly what Drayton McClain wasn't willing to do. The fact that you've got a guy that sure he wants to have his ring nights and sure he's going to do other things to generate that kind of revenue, to do those kind of things that makes the business profitable. But at the end of the day, even if he does it in some unconventional or unorthodox ways, hopefully in the short term, but we don't know for how long he's going to do it like this.
Uh-huh.
But because the talent is so good, they're right. It's not like he can run it in the ground in 1 year. And at the same time, we're seeing the deals that he has made, and there's not anything that raises two eyebrows and goes, oh, this is the beginning of the end. Yeah, the Montero deal, he might have overpaid a little bit. But the Abreu deal was fair, and it wasn't for 10 years, and it wasn't for $300 million. So for me personally, everybody can take their shots and nitpick and put him under the microscope. But the fact that he's focused on winning and maintaining sustained winning, that's what I like the most. And so I'm willing to be open-minded to it.
I think they're taking their shots because James Click was their dude. Like, James Click was part of the circle. James did a really good job. This quote goes on, obviously, but they feel like they can plug somebody else in there and win, and they might not be wrong. It stinks because they completely devalues the human element, the loyalty, and some of those things. I don't like it.
Boom.
There's a lot of baseball people that don't like the way that they've operated, but you cannot argue with results.
You said it, Jeremy. It's the word loyalty. The unwritten rule, right? The unwritten rule is you don't give a good, successful team, coach or general manager, a lame duck year. If they got 1 year left, you're supposed to renew them. If it's they got an expiring contract and they win the World Series, it's supposed to be the unwritten rule. You bring him back. You take care of him because he took care of you. But you know what? They didn't do it with Mike D'Antoni and the Rockets when a new owner came in and said, you know what? I'm not willing to do that. I don't care what the unwritten rule book says. I'm not going to pay two coaches, and I'm definitely not going to pay a guy I don't want.
But I disagree with this on this front. Jim Crane was going to bring James Click back. He was going to. He gave him an offer for a 1 year deal.
I don't think he was.
Oh, he gave him an offer.
I know, but I think he lowballed him.
Perhaps
I think he did it purposely for public perception.
I don't agree with that. Actually, I feel like he was going to give him a fair 1 year deal. Now, James Click probably didn't like the 1 year deal because he felt like, I'm a GM of a World Series winning team.
The unwritten rule book says you give a guy multiple years if he's a GM that wins the World Series.
Maybe, and I can understand why Click was upset with that. But Click also had the offer in hand when he went to Las Vegas and was operating as the general manager of the Houston Astros. And then all of a sudden, he started mentioning things with Crane about how they don't always see eye to eye. He kind of said things that weren't in a positive light for Jim Crane, and Jim Crane pulled the offer off the table. Mm-hmm. So Crane was going to be loyal to Click to an extent, 1 year deal. The money was probably fair. And then the moment that Click started running his mouth on Crane said, I was trying to be loyal to you, give you a 1 year deal. You started running your mouth about me. You're not being loyal to me.
You can look at it that way, but I can look at it the other way too and say, look, as a savvy businessman, I know this guy wants and needs this job. As we mentioned, there weren't jobs open at the time that he was doing this.
Uh-huh.
I think that Click probably assumed, yeah, this is where he's starting at. I know how negotiations go. At some point, we're going to meet in the middle, and he's going to give me multiple years. But and that's probably part of it too. But at the same time, if I'm Crane, I go, I need a guy that's going to. He's not going anywhere. He's going to keep doing what I ask him to do because he expects that at some point we're going to reach a deal. But I do believe to some degree he made the offer that he made so that he was going to do that, and so that from a public perception media standpoint, he could always come back out and say, hey, I tried to keep him. I made him an offer.
Ultimately, it kind of played out like probably a best for both sides scenario, right?
I disagree. No, I don't. I don't think this is the best case scenario for James Click. The best case scenario for James Click is he signs a 1 year deal. He's another year with the general. Yeah, exactly.
I suppose.
That's
but I think
the best case scenario.
I think in the grand scheme of things, that's like relatively unimportant.
How is that unimportant? It's probably the difference between a couple million dollars.
I think it's half-assing it, though, too. I think that you're not going to be fully invested for the full year. If you get any indication, you're not going to be back after the year. But you are getting paid for one more year. But the ideal, the ideal way to do it is, I think the owner plays and has they hold all the cards in this situation. But I think that if you look at it from the flip side, Daryl Morey did the exact same thing, but had the control to where he wrote it out so that he got out of and bought out of his current contract because he knew the owner didn't like him. And within a week, he got another contract to do the exact same job for $4 million more a year and never lost a single dime. But there was an opening in the league that where they needed a general manager.
Yeah, I think Click cost himself a lot of money here, actually. Jose De Jesus Ortiz, who was at the winter meetings as well, used to cover the Astros for the Chronicle. Apparently, he's still doing some work for the Astros as well. He said, judging by my interactions at the winter meetings, lots of talented baseball officials would love to get a call from Jim Crane about the vacant GM job. I spoke to multiple of them today. They want to work for the Astros because of the talent and Crane's commitment to win. So this idea that, no one's going to go work for Jim Crane, that is not true. And then McTaggart had a quote about agent Scott Boras, which just might not be a great thing. Boras on the Astros. They've been great to work with. They've been very attentive in communication. Jim's been on the phone with me a number of times. They really haven't skipped a beat as far as how we deal with them. So
that's Carlos Correa's agent.
Yeah, Carlos Correa ain't coming back.
No, I'm not saying coming
He's
back.
He's also Altuve's agent and Jose Urquidy's agent, I think. maybe there's one more. It might McCullers. Be it's either Bregman or McCullers. I think it is McCullers. Yeah, I think it is McCullers.
Well, but what I'm saying is, from that perspective, to hear a guy that represents even a Carlos Correa who he didn't bring back, you can at least understand from a business perspective that he, whether it worked out or not, he doesn't have any bitter feelings. He's like, you know, dude, I like the way he does business.
He does have Boris. Bregman does. Bregman has Boris, too.
Okay, so there's another one.
Yeah, he comes up in 2 years.
Because he has McCullers as well.
He has Altuve, too. He comes up in 2 years. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Look, I don't think I'm an over-the-top Lance McCullers homer. Some people call me Astros homers all the time. I get annoyed, though, when people talk about how his salary's being inflated, how his salary relative to baseball is inflated. I got some case studies that prove otherwise. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I just got called a redneck on Twitter, Blankers.
Twitter?
Yeah.
I would expect Yankee that in fan? Other places. Why?
Yeah, it is a Yankee fan. A Yankee fan called me a redneck. I guess I can tell you why. A lot of Yankee fans caught wind of my tweet yesterday where I said 9-year supply of juice baseballs heading to Yankee Stadium. I can't believe he stole an MVP from Ohtani. Yankee fans have been in my chili. They've been after me.
Did you see any of his replies, Joel?
I saw him getting into it with a few people.
Oh, he was... Jeremy has some time sometimes on Twitter.
Oh, I had time last night and this morning. I absolutely did. I woke up. You know how I woke up this morning? Usually I'm grumpy and I don't like waking up because I love to sleep. I woke up this morning, took the eldest to school, and I said, you know what? I'll leave the prep this morning up to Blankers and Brendan. I got the time.
I didn't and I read had the time. Many of the replies.
Do you chuckle amongst just with yourself as you're typing some of these?
Oh, yeah. Whenever like, the good got ones, him. Yeah. I don't say got him. That's not really my vernacular, but I'll be like... Okay.
I see some of your vernacular, the hell gnaws and things when you...
I don't talk that way. Gnaw, maybe.
Oh, nod, but not hell gnaw?
No, I won't say that on okay. Twitter.
I didn't look at all of Jeremy's replies, but I was just saying it to him off air. My favorite one. A Yankees fan quote tweeted Jeremy with a picture of Carson Wentz.
That was pretty good.
And no context.
Yeah, I go, why did you call me Wentz?
I saw that, because I was trying to figure out, I was like, why the hell did that guy just do that?
Honestly, I love it. I think... People should do more of that.
Do you know why he did it?
Not a clue.
Yeah, Brendan did it to me this morning.
I think we should start doing that on Twitter. When you don't like somebody's tweet, just reply with a picture of Carson.
It's not bad. You might have something there.
I've seen Jeremy get into a lot of Twitter spats. That was the best reply anyone's ever given.
I've never seen that either.
I just think for as like unruly and like salty Seattle fans could get, I think you are probably going to ratchet it up with Yankee fans.
I feel like my energy was about the same. I did
no,
say
not
this
you
on Twitter.
Personally, those
I
people.
Disagree, actually.
Really?
I disagree. Like, I had a Twitter spat with Mariner Twitter right. over the summer. I had a Twitter spat with the Yankees. It's still coming in. I just got called a redneck sack of poop by RUB ball season. Lots of exclamation points. He just called me a redneck sack of poop. I feel like the Mariners were better at it.
They were more
Yankee
creative.
Fans. I felt like the Mariners were way
I was
better
say,
at trash talking.
The creativity might
Yankee
be
fans.
One thing, but the vulgar, straight, cussing and go at your jugular is going to be Yankee fan.
No, man.
Really?
I would have thought that too. I'm surprised with how soft the Yankee fans are and how bad at trash talking they are. One other thing that I learned from this is that Yankee fans, I think a lot of them, and maybe this is maybe me being naive and stupid, are fair weather fans, bandwagon fans, all of that. Because I'm looking at a lot of these Yankee fans' profiles and stuff, and like they're Miami Dolphins fans, Miami Heat fans. There's one dude who's a Yankee fan, a Laker fan, and like a North Carolina fan. There was one dude.
They're not on the
bandwagon. Here was the worst one. There was one dude that was a Yankee fan and a Boston Celtic fan.
Oh, that's unheard of. You can't do
what
that.
What is that?
You can't
what
be
is
a
that?
New York team fan and be a Boston fan.
Right? That blew my mind.
Yeah,
I asked him, actually.
That's just sacrilegious.
I asked him, and I think he didn't respond. But they're still coming in. Maybe he'll respond. There is one thing that I learned today, that there has not been a clean championship for the New York Yankees since 1978.
Right.
They have not had a clean title since 78.
Well, because as much as they point the finger at 17, and they forget how many steroid users they had on that run with the teams that had Jeter and all the guys that was it
09 was the last one.
08 and 09 back-to-back?
No, 09 was the last
99
one.
99 and 2000 back-to-back?
They won a lot in that spot. They won three in a row. They won 96, took a break, 98, 99, 2000.
And then
they won in
2009.
Yeah. 09 was the team that had A-Rod, Robinson, Cano. And I don't want to mention the local Houston pitcher that was on that team as well. 2000, they had Jose Canseco. Jose Canseco played a few games for that team. And then they had a couple of other players. That whole stretch had a couple of other players. The last time the Yankees won a World Series that was clean, was 1978 when they were led by Astro Reggie Jackson.
Willie Randolph.
No, no, no. Don't say Reggie Jackson. It is Astro Reggie Jackson that led that 1978 World Series.
Because he wears his Astro hats now when he does interviews.
You know something else I learned today, which was funny for that 09 team? Johnny Damon was on that team. And Johnny Damon is quoted as to saying that you can't take the 09 team seriously because of the PED use on that team.
I've never heard that.
I didn't either. That was the first time I had seen that, which was kind of fun to
watch. I saw a documentary ESPN did on the Dodgers-Yankees from 77-78.
Well, that was probably pretty good.
And it was really good because you forget, like, Reggie played with – Willie Randolph played there so long, but he played with all these different guys, and it was the whole Billy Martin, Reggie Jackson, Steinbrenner thing. But it was really interesting. And on the flip side, like, Garvey was – like, you know, America's, like, pretty boy, like, clean as a whistle, and he was hated in his own dugout, and all these different stories with Lasorda. It was really well done.
Chris from Sam Houston said Melky got pinched for Roids later, too. I didn't know about that, Melky Cabrera.
Yes, he did, I think when he was at Cleveland.
Oh, there's another one. I mean, just getting dirtier and dirtier by the day, those Yankees. Dre says Astro legend Reggie Jackson.
Was Giambi on that team?
No, I don't think so.
I thought Giambi might be on that team as
the
well.
The 09 team?
Yeah.
Let me look real quick. I thought that Teixeira was their first baseman. Yeah, who's Teixeira?
Okay.
Now, yeah, I was seeing if he was the DH for that team. Hideki Matsui was still the DH. I think that was later. I think that they got they were chasing championships, so they got dirtier and dirtier. 713-780
ESPN. That Brian Cashman guy.
Clown, yeah. Anyways.
Rich clown.
Cashman?
Rich clown. Just got an extension. Yeah. He's going to continue to get paid.
Jameson Taillon also got an extension. Congratulations to him, the Woodlands kid. Got paid handsomely. Four years, $68 million.
The cheater factory of New York and got to Chicago.
But yeah, he's going to Wrigley. To Wrigley to be a Chicago Cub. The average annual value for Jameson Taillon. And look, I like Jameson Taillon. I know that the Astros beat him up a little bit in the playoffs as they beat up the Yankees badly. They swept him. Can you imagine, though, that the Yankees signed Judge? By the way, as you're well aware, that's huge. Can you imagine adding Judge to that lineup that got swept by the Astros?
Yeah, I mean, look at all the different things that they've actually done to get better so that they can have a team that competes even more than the competitive team that got swept by the Astros.
All right, I'm gonna lay off.
Look at their lineup top to bottom. Tell me where they got better. They keep losing guys. They're not adding guys. And now with that inflated salary and all the years they got to pay them, it's going to handcuff them for the next 10 years.
I'm going to lay off a little bit. I feel bad for them. They haven't won a clean title since 78.
Deeply engaged for 24
years. Yeah, I'm a little nauseated with the Yankees. Anyways, that Taillon contract, $17 million per year. We hear a lot of times about Lance McCullers, and I'm like, I like Lance McCullers. I'm not over the top Lance McCullers, hung the moon, bury me in the H, blah, 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 blah. I like Lance. I don't love Lance. I think he's a very good pitcher. I know that he has the injury concerns, which makes him a little bit of a flawed player, right? But something that does bother me when people talk about Lance McCullers is that, he's overpaid. He's got too much of an inflated contract. You can never trust, blah, 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 blah. I look at some of these contracts that are being signed right now around Major League Baseball, and Jameson Taillon, no hate at all to Taillon. I like him a lot. Love the fact that he's from Houston. That dude's getting paid the same amount of money as Lance McCullers, and he's nowhere in the same stratosphere as Lance McCullers. I never want to hear again that Lance McCullers is overpaid.
Taillon Walker just signed with the Phillies from the Mets. He got close to the same AAV. The salaries that I've seen for starting pitchers that would be considered probably the three, or you know maybe in some cases depending on what other pitchers you have in your roster, the two. But it's more.
Especially now.
Common than you think. Yeah. That in that part of the rotation, you're between 17 and 20, $22 million a year. And so you shouldn't think that he was grossly overpaid because he fits beautifully right in where he belongs. Now, look, I've been a guy that my biggest knock on Lance McCullers is the injuries.
Sure, and that's fair. I mean, obviously it's fair.
Like, I'm not worried about him tipping pitches, and more times than not, he'll figure that out. And that's not going to be a problem because it hasn't been. He's had unbelievable stuff. He's got one of the best curveballs, and his breaking pitches are some of the best in baseball.
He's kind of he's different now than he was when he came up.
Yeah, reinvented himself after he threw the 24 straight curveballs and he had the issues with his arm. But at the same time, I don't have anything but confidence in his stuff. But I also, my biggest concern is staying injury-free going forward. If they can find a way to do that, whether it's a six-man rotation or, like you said, him changing some of the things that he does, then that's even better. But I think that's also part of the reason that he was willing to take the long-term deal at that yeah. price, and they were willing to sign it, because at that price, he's a bargain if he stays healthy or not.
It's kind of a clearance rack contract. Like, Lance McCullers, if Lance McCullers was always healthy and Lance McCullers was never hurt, look, he took a little bit of a hometown discount. I think he loves Houston, and we should admire him for that. If Lance McCullers hit the open market, he would get $25 million a year, maybe close to $30 million a year, as pitching desperate as people are. Jameson Taillon just signed this four-year deal, $17 million AAV. Lance McCullers, $17 million AAV. Taillon's career ERA is north of 375. Lance McCullers' career ERA is south of 350. Like, the Astros have a hometown discount. Now, was part of that discount because Lance McCullers is fragile and you got him a little bit on the injury rate? Yeah, you did. But Lance McCullers is not overpaid, and I'm sick of hearing it, and I never want to hear it again.
No, I think that a lot of people get bitter because when they give away what they think is free money, and no one can ever predict when they're going to get hurt or if they're going to get hurt, but the same way that suddenly Justin Verlander, but Tommy John surgery, I mean, he had a major injury, and that's part of the deal when you do the kind of long-term deals that teams have to do to get players. You had to pay Justin Verlander, and unfortunately, he needed Tommy John surgery, and you paid him for not pitching, essentially, other than one game for almost 2 years. That's the way it goes. The same thing with McCullers. People get pissed off when he didn't pitch in the World Series. He didn't pitch most of last year. So I get, because they're pissed off, now they want to say that you're overpaying. You didn't get the return on investment. I mean, you don't know when your body's going to break down. Mm-hmm. It's not his fault. And I think that was a give and take handshake deal to keep him where he wanted to be at a price that the team was willing to pay.
I get the frustration. Those people were just wrong. 2-3-4-1. You guys are so petty that the Astros cheated, got caught. It's been 5 years. Let it go. Yankees were cheating, stealing signs before the Astros were, by the way. He said he's not a Yankee fan. And he does have a Houston area code. But Yankees were sign-stealing before the Houston Astros were. Don't ever forget that. And I'm glad that you're not a Yankee fan, because the last clean title the Yankees won was 1978.
Go back and listen to Buster Olney, by the way, and he verified what we said about who was cheating first.
Yeah, I might have leaded him a little bit on that one. 713-780-ESPN. Why you should be rooting for total and utter failure the rest of the way for the Houston Texans. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you the people at Apollo Men's Health yet again, because they can change people's lives on a daily basis. You're not trying to win a gold medal at this stage in your life. You're trying to win the day. And that means having enough energy to do all the things you need to do, from getting all your work done to making sure that you can get to the gym, take care of your honeydews, make sure you got time to play with the kids and do the things that they need you for. And sometimes you feel like you're just gassed, you're exhausted, and you don't have enough energy to get through it all. Therefore, you leave things that you didn't accomplish during the day. It can be fixed. It's as simple as setting up an appointment with Apollo Men's Health. They have all the different ways to get more energy back in your life on a daily basis. It all starts with a B12 shot. It can go as far as hormone therapy and the different ways that they can administer it to you, whether going into the clinics weekly, or them being able to teach you how to administer it at home and getting you the product, to both cutting-edge testosterone pellet therapy for both men and for women. It's a wonderful situation, because you only have to go in once every 6 months, but you reap the benefits of more energy on a daily basis. Check it out today. Go to ApolloMH.com. See all the services they offer, because they all offer things to improve your workouts, your recovery, even things for your smoothies, and they can take care of you too. If you see some things that you're interested in, set up an appointment. Most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Then go in with an open mind, answer their questions, tell them what you're trying to achieve. They'll put you on a program that works. They're going to get you results. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by, because you'll get a free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first official visit. But then make sure you stick with your program, because you will get where you want to go. They are good people doing great things. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Bad Take Boulevard coming up at 2. We have a new title sponsor for Bad Take Boulevard at 2 o'clock as well. Also, we're giving away Houston, Alabama tickets. Hottest ticket in town. Two top 10 teams, Houston number one, Alabama number eight. They have their rematch, much awaited rematch from a year ago when Alabama beat the Cougars by one in controversial fashion in Tuscaloosa. Rematch coming up on Saturday. Secondary ticket prices for this stuff is through the roof. It's the hottest ticket in town, so you want to be listening in the 2 o'clock hour as we give away a pair of tickets to see the number one Houston Cougars and the number eight Alabama Crimson Tide. Alabama's got like four NBA dudes. They got dudes going to be top five pick in the NBA draft, and they have another dude who's going to be probably a second half of the first round guy as well. So it should be a really fun matchup. I think, Blankers, that you should be rooting, if you're a Texans fan, for total and utter failure the rest of the way. Look, you might even be, not you specifically, you generally, you might be on the side of get rid of Caserio. I'm personally not. You might be on the side of get rid of Lovie Smith, which I can hear that, especially, and we made these compromises yesterday. We all know that I don't want a quarterback at number one. I want a best player available or trade down. But if you're telling me that they will be picking Bryce Young, Will Levis, who's at the top of some dude's big boards, by the way, or C.J. Stroud, okay, I'm willing to compromise there, but you better give me an offensive-minded head coach. So you might be in this. You might be in business for get rid of Caserio. You might be in the mindset of get rid of Lovie Smith. You might be in the mindset of I want to guarantee that number one pick. I know that we think it's all but a certainty that the Houston Texans will be picking number one, but there is still a little bit of work to be done to get to that point. The reason that I think you should be rooting for just total and utter failure the rest of the way, like be rooting for chaos, be rooting for everything to go wrong, is for all of those reasons, is so that you can lock in the number one pick. If everything looks awful the rest of the way and you're looking at the head coaching position, Cal McNair, and if Nick Caserio is still around, you're going to be looking at the situation saying, we have no choice but to get rid of Lovie Smith. We cannot be looking at a second year of what is absolute, total, and utter failure. And if you're on the side of getting rid of Nick Caserio, which we're not, the best way that you're going to clean house, that Cal McNair is going to clean house, is if he looks at his organization and he's embarrassed about it and he's desperate to change the tide. The only way Caserio, Lovie Smith are getting fired is if this total and utter failure of the 2022 season continues the rest of the way.
Well, and I will make a point to support your point, and that is that you were the one, when we went back and forth, that brought up that Cal really, to put Bill O'Brien on the spot, took away everybody else and said, Bill, it's on you. Go do what you do. Mm-hmm. And then let him basically cut his own throat. So I think that's essentially what
gave him the rope.
Yeah, I think that's what you're essentially getting to here. Look, I think that if we have to debate whether Caserio was in on, made, or had a part in hiring Lovie Smith or not, we know what he did with Culley. If you are out on Nick Caserio, that is the way to get everything that you need for this franchise. Because of the fact that we've highlighted over and over again, whenever you decide to take the franchise quarterback, and it looks like no matter what we've debated, that they're going to take a quarterback that they assume is going to be their franchise quarterback in this draft.
Do you think so? Do you think it's a certainty?
I think it's leaning that way. I didn't say it's a certainty, but I think that more arrows are pointing, in my opinion, that direction than not. But if they do indeed take a franchise quarterback in this year's draft, then it's imperative to have the right coach and coaching staff in place to give said quarterback the best chance to win. And that is not going to be the staff that is here currently. Yeah. So if you want the GM to go or not, but in specifics, if you want the coaching staff to go, because it is a little bit more dicey than just, oh, I'm going to get rid of my coach and I can do whatever I want, then this is the way to do it.
Yeah, utter and just complete failure the rest of the way makes it easier to make that decision. Because where are we at, like, on the percentage of chance that Lovie Smith is fired?
Well, you better hope Lovie keeps holding press conferences like he did, too, because that helps.
You think so?
Because it looks like he's crumbling. It looks like he's melting under pressure.
Doesn't have control of the situation.
Yes, yes.
What do you think the chances are, you know, 1 to 100, the probability, that Lovie Smith is no longer the head coach of the Texans 2023? Where are y'all at on that? Like, you know, I think it's 50-50. I think it's 60-40.
I think right now it's 50-50.
Man.
Oh, wow. I was going to say like 30% chance.
That's where
fired.
I'm at. I think it's like 30.
30 he comes back?
30 he's fired. I think he's more than likely
back. See, I'm on the other side of that, completely opposite. I think it's 70-30.
He's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, I think he's probably back.
I think there's still enough games and there's still enough football to be played where it hasn't been decided yet. I think right now it's clearly right down the middle on the fence. I think Cal and whoever
couldn't have been more down the middle.
Dude, this actually blows my mind. Like, I'm dead serious that this blows my mind. That we are right dead in the middle about what we think the chances are of Lovie Smith getting fired. I think if there's a 70% chance he gets fired, you're 50-50, Brendan's 30. Like, we are completely divided on it. I'm shocked. Like, I wonder if the Hive is thinking this way, too. 713-780-ESPN.
And take away 713-780-3776. What you want, just be honest about right. what you think.
Right.
Yeah, don't be, if you hate the guy like Gary, then don't just say he's going to get fired.
I don't know if Gary hates. Are you talking about? I don't think he hates Lovie.
Gary said he's not a Casario. No, Casario.
We're talking Lovie.
Oh, that's right. We're talking, okay, just Lovie. You know, no, I think that
You're 50-50 on Lovie, right?
I think.
You were talking about Lovie, not Casario?
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. I did. Okay. Yeah.
Just making sure.
I thought Gary was also talking about Lovie the same way. But if you have that passion or that negativity towards Lovie Smith, don't let it influence the way you say it. Just look at it from an outsider's perspective and say, what are the chances Lovie Smith is back next year? I think right now it's still on the fence. I don't think that they like the way that the locker room has gone, because right after Lovie looked like he was crumbling in press conferences and he was basically felt the pressure of the media and the fan base to make a quarterback change. You heard Brandon Cooks and other guys start making references and things to where there was an indication that things aren't exactly being run real smoothly behind the scenes. So I think that there's a lot still that's kind of percolating right now that could go either way. That's why I'd say right now it's 50-50.
If you lean towards getting rid of him, though,
uh-huh. Why I want complete utter failure.
Do you handle the Cooks situation a bit differently? You go, if there's an issue between Cooks and Lovie.
I don't think there's an issue between Cooks and Lovie. I really don't. I think Cooks' issue is that he's on a lousy team.
Fair.
Yeah. I think there's an issue between Cooks and Nick Casario.
Potentially. Maybe even Pep.
Because,
I don't think
Nick didn't move him.
I do wonder,
yeah, potentially,
if you're planning on getting rid of Lovie, maybe you take action for stuff like that, though. Maybe it doesn't fix Brandon Cooks. But I do think that, like, there. It helps send a message to players like Brandon Cooks.
Tank Ortiz on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. 90% he'll be fired. Todd says 80-20 he'll be fired. Rainman says 60-40 he stays. B. Hannon says 90% he stays. Big C, 70-30 fired. I am shocked that it's this divisive.
I think your formula that you laid out is the scenario that he gets fired. Other than that, I do think that whether we say it's good, bad, or indifferent, I think that there is a lot of concern that if they just decide to fire him and move on and they can't say that there was complete and utter failure and it was an embarrassment down the stretch, mm-hmm. that they will get hammered by the media. They will get hammered by the fan base that is in very specifically looking at the fact that 2 years in a row, one and done, both happen to be African-American as well. Not a good look. People are going to hammer you.
Yeah.
But if the wheels fall off, the engine falls out and everything, the doors are blown away, then you can say, look, we can't do that for another year. And then you can make, there's your built-in excuse for why you just clean slate.
Chris from Sam Houston says firing Lovie and keeping Casario would be ridiculous. I actually disagree with that. I feel like Cal needs to give Casario the rope, mm-hmm. like he gave O'Brien the rope. Move on from Lovie. Tell Nick, this is your final opportunity. This is going to be, look, I made you hire Lovie. My bad. You go hire your coach, and we're going to start evaluating you more than we have been coming up in year three of the six-year rebuild. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Troy, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Troy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I think the rest of the season is going to be just like it has been. It's going to be total failure. My question is Eric the enemy the right offensive mind to coach to bring in and get rid of Pep Hamilton? I'll hang up and listen.
Appreciate the call, Troy. Bienemy's not going to come to the Texans to be the OC. There's no way he'd be the OC. He'd have to be the head coach. Eric Bienemy's not been well received amongst NFL, the circles in the NFL, the industry. He's not been a head coach despite having a really good resume.
Didn't interview well.
He doesn't interview well. One of the things that I look at, too, whenever I'm trying to evaluate a coordinator to be the head coach, is I don't want to hire a head coach who's not responsible for the reason the team is playing well, or is not responsible for the team having success. If I look at Kansas City, the things I point to before anything else are Pat Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, mm-hmm. Bienemy so far down that list. Or if I look at the Detroit Lions, why are the Detroit Lions having unbelievable success offensively? I'm looking at their OC, Ben Johnson. Like, he's made, you know, chicken salad out of chicken you know what, whereas Bienemy's along for the ride. So I don't view Bienemy as a realistic option to be the head coach of the Houston
Well,
Texans.
And remember now, Andy Reid has had to make more adjustments after Bienemy's last interview cycles when those kind of things came out, because the other knock on him was he wasn't even calling plays. The majority of the plays were still being called by Andy Reid, to where Andy Reid started to get Eric Bienemy to call more of the plays, mm-hmm. be more involved in the play-by-play offense so that he could build up his resume, because Andy Reid wants Eric Bienemy to get a head coaching job. But even with that said, with a guy in his corner to want that, So far, it hasn't worked out with him in any of these situations to be a finalist and get a job. So you want a guy, too, that is more in today's modern offenses that are being run in the NFL. You want a guy that understands the best way to maximize the usage of your franchise quarterback. Keeps him out of harm's way, too, by keeping him on the move and keeping him away from where the defensive pressure is coming from and running an offense that has the capabilities to use multiple different options to make plays succeed and then put points on the board.
We're going to move back Bad Take Boulevard to 215. Too much meat on the bone here. 713-780-ESPN. I am shocked with how, you know, many people think that Lovey's like 50-50 or better to keep the job that he currently has. Where do you stand, Houston? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.